We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Erin, from Everlearning. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, whole life learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us. Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. Today it's Ashley and I, and we are super happy to be joined by Kelly Edwards of 90 Minutes School Day. Hello, Kelly.
Hello.
And April Scully of Modern Homeschoolers and Heroine of Your Own Story. Hi, April.
Hi.
We're excited today. We're going to be talking about, I guess the name we came up with is Spot the Learning. And it feels maybe like a good time of year to get thinking about it as we're sort of, I know some places actually have maybe already gone back to school. We're recording mid-August right now. Here in Canada, that will be happening soon though, within the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I think it's just kind of a nice time to maybe remind ourselves of all the learning our kids are already doing, and just kind of like slowing down and tuning into that, because it's definitely always happening, but it's really fun sometimes just to kind of slow down and really, I guess, just observe and have a closer look sometimes at just kind of all the things that are happening in our family and our home. And I was excited to have you, Kelly and April, because both of you have been putting out some really neat just reels and snippets from your days. And it's just, I don't know, it just really reinforces all the cool things that our kids are doing. And I feel like some of them, I feel like you've both kind of got a close eye into things that maybe you could easily miss them if you're just thinking, oh, my kid's doing sidewalk chalk right now, or, you know, if we just kind of like label the activity. But I love the way you've both been pulling just kind of pulling things out and really kind of helping people have a deeper look at the learning that's happening. So, and Ashley, I, once again, did not really formally say hello to you. Do you have anything to add before we kind of get started, or?
No, I think that's okay. just excited.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Good. So I think we, you know, I put out some thoughts that we could kind of think about. And one of the things that came to mind is, I just got curious about, you know, was there a moment or a particular experience where each of us kind of noticed that really sort of natural learning happening, or maybe it hit us at a different level? And I can share for myself just to kind of get things going. I remember my oldest child. So my husband was watching NASCAR, which was a Sunday afternoon staple at our house. And my son was really into cars at the time. So he had quite a collection of cars, and a number of them had numbers on them. Like some of them were the actual little model cars. And then some were just, I don't know, other ones he'd accumulated. And he had one of those floor carpets with the shape of a track. And I noticed, I noticed him setting up well, if you've watched NASCAR, you know how many cars are set up. So like rows of cars and like layers of cars. And then he got into this really interactive race. I'm thinking he was probably 3.5-ish. And so he's got them all set up, and then it just becomes very dramatic. So he's got a whole kind of like storyline in place around who's, you know, what's happening with these cars and what they're doing. But I started to notice, you know, he would say like, and here comes the 48 car, you know, they're in second place, but wait, the 24 is, so he's doing all this stuff. And I started to realize like, that's really how he learned his double digits, was playing with NASCAR. But so I noticed that piece, but then the second piece was noticing, so it was beyond just like those cardinal numbers of, you know, 24, 48, he was understanding ordinal numbers, right? So like putting them in order, switching the order up, you know, understanding that if somebody passed one car, then that car was now behind. And so at first glance, it just looks like a kid playing on the floor with cars. But watching it, I was like, wow, he has just picked up so many. I mean, what would be considered like early numeracy skills. And, but beyond that too, there was this, you know, he had the intonation of the announcer. So he's got his own, and his language was still a little bit limited at that point, right? But he's got the, you know, kind of the dramatic voice going on, and he's telling this whole story. And I don't know if he had an outcome in mind, probably not. He was maybe going as he went, but it was even beyond the numbers to me, that's like storytelling, and it's dramatic, right? Because he's using a different voice and he's kind of putting himself into it. So, for me, that was probably one of the first, not that I didn't know that kids learn naturally, but it was one of the first times where I looked more deeply, and it kind of hit me in a different way. So, I mean, I have lots of others, but I just want to give somebody else a chance if anything else is coming up, for any of you.
I loved hearing that story, Erin. I really enjoyed kind of how you laid it out. I was there on the floor with your son, and then having that moment of realization inside your own head as mom, looking and being like, oh my gosh, numeracy through NASCAR. Who knew? I love the alliteration, by the way, numeracy through NASCAR. Like, that should be a blog post for you.
That's good. That's good. Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, you're welcome. And so I love hearing that. And I love, this is what makes me really excited about conversations like this, because as homeschool moms, we all notice different things in our kids, and each of our kids is different, and each of our kids shows up with their interests and how they're picking up the skills that they need in learning based on the meaning in their play, the relationships they have. Like, he has a relationship with NASCAR. Who introduced that to him? There's a backstory, I'm sure. And then to be able to pull out the learning, and that really is a skill that I think I'm strong in, and it helps me in those moments where I'm like having the self-doubt and I'm like, oh, am I doing enough? And it helps me in my homeschooling coaching practice to like work with parents who are like, well, all they're doing is this, and all they did today was this. And I'm like, oh, wow, they did a lot. And they're like, really? Tell me more. And what comes to mind, just as two quick illustrations while you were talking, from my homeschool, so it's a little different, is the first thing is my middle daughter is a very relational person. She's a little extrovert like me. And when she was a baby, I have this real strong visual of, we have this enormous round dining room table. And so I had her, gosh, I think she was like 4 months old. So she was on her belly and I had all the laundry on the table, and she was in the center of the table facing me and I'm folding laundry. And I just remember having this moment of like, togetherness with her, like full eye contact. I'm having a conversation. She's cooing at me. She's stretching for the laundry to grab it. You know how babies are. And I just remember thinking like, we're getting to know each other. Like, we're teammates here. All of my children are adopted. So I didn't have the privilege of carrying her and getting to know her in that way, you know, prenatally, and just having that connection and that relationship. And whether she's just reaching for it for her own motives, or she was reaching for it because she saw me reaching for it, that eye connection is how learning happens, right? Like, the connection with someone else that is of interest to you. So I kind of wanted to thread that into this conversation. And then from like, let's just talk about an older kid. So like my oldest, and I've shared this before, but it's one of the clearest illustrations that I have to kind of show all the learning that is happening inside of a child, that from our position as not the person learning, so the parent, it looks like she's doing nothing. And then I come to find out there's everything happening. So this was 3 or 4 years ago. She's outside. I was inside, and I had pointed out a butterfly to her in the front yard and gone inside. And the only reason I remember that is because I took a picture of this butterfly. And then she came in, I don't even know how much longer later, so excited, telling me she watched that monarch lay an egg on a leaf. And pardon me. And I was like, she did not lay an egg, you know, me, the know-it-all, like, she did not lay an egg. We don't have milkweed in our yard. What are you talking about? And she's like, I know, but she did, I promise. I was, okay, fine. So bring the leaf in. We look at it underneath a microscope. and look at the shape, and it sure does look like some sort of egg. So then we're Googling, right? Like, what does a monarch egg look like? And it is a monarch egg. So then the question is, well, what kind of leaf is this? And it's this invasive vine we have that we're pulling out all the time. It's, you know, it's a weed. Oh, wait, it's a member of the milkweed family. So then she asked, can I raise this caterpillar? And I was like, sure. And she had found a couple others. So we had like four jars set up. She's like now wanting to become, I forget what they're called, like a lepidurist, whatever. There's a scientific name for it. Starts with an L. And that launched a journey into butterflies and butterfly study for her. And eventually she hatched this butterfly and she tagged it. It was one of the last generation that came, that its mom must have come from Canada. And that this little guy went all the way, and we learned how to sex, how to tell the gender, tagged him, and then he went to Mexico. So that just goes to show that, like, when she's outside daydreaming, doing whatever she's doing, there's so much learning happening and so many questions and so much curiosity, because she apparently like stalked this butterfly on all of its little travels through our yard, and then she saw it lay the egg. And so that, I think, is a beautiful example of natural learning. So I'll be quiet right now, let you guys share, but.
No, thank you. I love that, Kelly. And I like the fact that there's like stages to it, right? She notices the egg, she comes and tells you there, it's just such a, like, it's a process, which is very cool. And I love your earlier example too, because I think we forget how much is happening for babies, for infants. And April, it actually reminds me, you had posted a reel. It was so beautiful, but it started with your kids being really little. I'm going to have to, anyway, I'll find it and link it. It was just maybe a week or two ago, but yeah.
I can't think of what it could have been. I've been doing too many reels in the last 2 weeks.
I think it had to do intuitive parenting, or like,
yes, it was the audio about how important the early years are in really, and that attachment relationship. Is that maybe the one you were talking about?
The one.
And just taking that time as parents when our kids are very young, if you're taking that time to spend with them, to just spend time, not trying to teach them specifically about something, but just spend that time, get to know them, play with them. If you make that a priority in the early years, that is something that you will just continue to do, because you're going to see the value, you're going to feel the value in that. And that is really setting them up for a success later on in the whole parent child relationship.
Yeah, that's exactly the one. I loved it.
Yeah, it was really, really awesome audio. I didn't do it justice.
Well, I don't know. The examples you found from your own family, it was kind of touching. So I think, and even though you're talking about earlier years in that reel, I think it's similar to what we're talking about today, which is, I mean, we know there are things that we can show our children directly. Sometimes that's just necessary. But we can get so caught up in that, right? This direct kind of like coming from us onto them and really slowing down and kind of connecting, seeing what comes up without us always being in the teacher role is, I think, pretty fruitful, but pretty cool. It's just fun, right? Fun to watch too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking just as you said that, Erin, about the kind of our role in it with natural learning. And I have some memories of, and this might be a little bit of my teaching background coming in and having to de-school around that and just kind of shift my ideas around what learning is supposed to look like and what learning is supposed to feel like and what my role is. But when the kids were younger, it was almost like as they started to get older, maybe even as they started to get school age, you know, they'd come to me with the curiosity and the questions. And I think I overdid it at times, right? Like I would be like, oh, here's that learning opportunity. And I don't even think that, you know, I didn't say that to myself, but I kind of reacted in that way. And I think at one point I would have thought like that was, you know, very child led. And I suppose it is, but it was almost like I just took over. Like I was excited. Like here they came with just a genuine interest, curiosity. Sometimes they were really excited. Sometimes they were just, you know, maybe a little bit interested, but I got so excited. I think as many of us do, especially when they're younger and they're starting to like tell us something and we're learning about them. And we're like, oh, they're figuring this out. And it's fun and it's exciting. But I can remember there being times where I think that really turned them off. And so that was part of my learning journey with the kind of not taking over and just letting them get as much out of whatever the thing is that they're interested in at the time and letting that go. And maybe they'll come back to it and learn more about butterflies or whatever it may be later on. And maybe they won't. And I think with the natural learning, realizing that, you know, you can have a few kids together or a few people together learning about the same thing. And everyone's going to take away different things anyway. They don't all take away the exact same thing or remember, you know, every little detail. We take away what's meaningful to us. And so really just for me, it meant like just being more quiet, letting them ask their questions. But I think focusing on what you guys have already mentioned, like the relationship, right? So it's not anymore for me. It's not so much about the learning, even though I think that's really cool and I enjoy seeing that. I'm much more interested in our relationship in that moment. And I think that just took me time to get to the point where like trusting the process, right? Knowing that the learning is happening. So I'm not having to have that at the front of my mind, but just being in relation together. And sometimes I'm only a little bit involved and sometimes I'm really involved and that's all fine.
I just love listening to all of you and how it, you know, kind of triggers all these thoughts and all these stories and connections as we go. But I think that much like you're saying, Ashley, I feel like my experience with my son was kind of I think it started for me early on that I realized that his brain, although he is my biological child, does not work anything like mine. And I had this this really funny aha moment that stands out in my mind here when we were living in Asheville, North Carolina. We're in Greenville, South Carolina now. But we were living in Asheville at the time and we're in the bathroom and my husband loves foam soap. I don't know how you all feel about the kind of soap that you use, but all of our bathrooms have foam soap. I had never thought about soap in my life until I was married. But maybe this is the connection between how my husband's brain works and my son's brain. So we have the foam soap in the bathroom and my son, I don't know, he was probably a year, maybe one or two at the time. We left that house when he was two. So he was probably a year and a half. And he just suddenly became fascinated with the foam soap bottle. And he took it off and he's pumping it and he's watching how it pumps and he's turning, you know, and my mind was blown because I'm just looking at him going, how have I been using this soap and have never ever, ever thought about how this bottle works. And probably if he didn't bring it up to me, I never would have thought about it at all, period. I would have just kept using the soap and not thought about, you know, that part of it. But to me, that was this kind of moment of, okay, this child he's my child, but I think he learns in a really different way than I do. He sees the world in a completely different way than I do. And so I think I'm going to be kind of learning along with him and, you know, really kind of my husband was good about letting him try all the things that he wanted to try. My background, you know, was an elementary school teacher. I was in education as well. I had not had a lot of experience with really little kids, like doing things like using big scissors and using hammers. But, you know, my son was the kind of kid is the kind of kid who just wanted to get right in and use all the things. So it was interesting to kind of watch that process and to know early on that if I wanted him to learn in his way based on his interests that were not my interests or my areas of expertise, I was going to have to, you know, pull in some experts like YouTube and places like that to really help him move at his own pace and in his own direction. So, you know, I think it's kind of evolved in its own way over the years. But most recently, I think I know at least you, Aaron, have seen some of the fishing videos that we've done recently. And so he has, a lot of his stuff has just really been, you know, self-taught with YouTube videos or other experts where, you know, he is out there. He was interested in learning how to fish. So he went on YouTube, he watched all the videos. And then last week, I think we fished, you know, five days out of seven. And he's out there doing everything himself. I'm watching him, and the kids are learning from him, and the adults are kind of fascinated by all these fish that he's pulling in off the dock. But it's really just been him and his own interests at his own pace that I think has really helped us to get to where he wanted to be and where he needs to be. Just to your point, Ashley, about trusting that process and getting out of his way.
I love that, April. I love that whole story, and everything that was coming up for me when you first started was like, oh my gosh, how much of a mess is this little guy going to make with this foam soap? But, and that you were just sitting there like, okay, we're just going to watch and see what happens. And it makes so much sense. Like, he's like, it's liquid, and because it's probably a clear bottle, right? It's liquid at the bottom. And like, how is it getting vaporized in this foam? And so he had kind of an inquiring mind. Kids are such scientists. And so he's breaking this apart. And then you're just there observing him. And I think if you do nothing else in your homeschool, just watch your kids and like, no judgment. I'm just going to watch this play out. I'm going to ensure safety. And I'm going to remember that most of my household items are washable. My kid is washable. And I'm just going to let this play out. And I'm going to trust that my child isn't trying to cause me personal pain and agony, that there is a purpose behind what they're doing. And I can jump in with a few stories because I feel like stories are kind of like the picture is worth a thousand words. Like, anyone listening is hearing different things from our stories based on their own experience and personal history. So to kind of like expand on what you were just saying, it reminded me. And I love, the other thing I love is how you're, before I go into my story, the other thing I loved is how you're observing your son without judgment. So if he's interested in fishing, he's allowed to move into that space until the end, which is a type of play. It's mastery, right? He's pursuing that mastery until he gets satiated. And this ties back to earlier in the conversation. He gets satiated to whatever point he needs at this point in time. So maybe like just kind of going fishing for one time would have satiated another child, but your son is at a level of interest of fishing that like he needed the 5 days last week, and you provided and protected the space to do so. And there's so much learning going on besides just the obvious of the fishing. Like, he's getting self-confidence built up. He's getting the ability to know that he tracked from an interest all the way through to the end. And whether that's fishing and that is a lifelong interest of his, or if he just needs that confidence boost to know that mom and dad trust me, I did this big thing, I could do another big thing. And to tack that back to like the little ages, because little ages sometimes, especially if we have several people in our house that are small and we're hanging out with one of them, or we're problem solving with one of them and we're doing the thing with one of them, there's always one that creeps off and does something, right? Like, so I walked in, one of my daughters, I won't call her out, but one of my daughters, I walked in and there she was with her pants down, and she, you know, she has her underwear, but her little pants were down around her, and she'd gotten hold of the diaper cream. She was rubbing the Desitin all over her legs. Like, her legs were totally white, and it was kind of like little handprints everywhere. And you know, that stuff is hard to get off anything. It's designed that way. And I walked in and had that panic of just like, oh, not one more mess to clean up. But I paused. It was not me. I think I was so astounded. I was just quiet. And then she started talking to me and she was telling me about this experience, how it felt. And she's just a tiny little person. And that then helped me calm down to really notice that she was having some sort of sensorial experience and she had transformed herself, right? She had changed her appearance and she was curious about like what this stuff did on other parts of her body. And the same child, I walked in on her as a young toddler age, and she had crawled out of her crib during quiet time and she had unplugged her lamp in her room and etched a mural on the wall. And I remember walking in and she was like so excited to show me all of her creations on the wall. And it was like a huge mural that she had etched to the wall. And again, like her intent was not to deface the property. She, I don't know how this came about, but that's early writing, right? She had her fine motor skills going. She had found a writing utensil very creatively of her. And then she had engraved her story on the wall and she was telling me all about it. So these are the moments that as a mom, I think we've all had these moments in our different ways. And I'm grateful for like the phone in my pocket that I can just whip out and like record. Cause it's funny, right? I'm going to send this to grandma and grandpa, you know, like this moment. And then we have it for posterity. And when we're not as tired or frustrated with whatever just happened and we've cleaned up the mess and we look back on it, you can find all kinds of learning, right? Like I just broke it down with the writing and the storytelling and everything. So yeah, that was what was coming up for me as you were sharing, April. That was such a good share.
I love it.
Oh my gosh, Kelly. And just the fact that you, when you first went in with the cream, just giving that pause, because I think that's such a big piece of it, right? Because I think most of us, our kind of instinct, or maybe it's conditioned learning or whatever, would be to react in some way, right? Maybe not harshly, maybe, maybe not harshly, but to react in some way. So the fact that you gave that pause and then it like gave her space to talk about how excited she was. So it kind of diffuses it because you can see it's not intentionally trying to make your day difficult. But in that moment, that's what we're thinking, right? So I just think that pause is crucial because then it allowed that time for her to, for that to rise up, what she was excited about or what she was learning about.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I will say that before, it sounds like I always have the pause. There have been many times where I have not had the pause, which makes me appreciate the times where I have paused. And you're always rewarded for that. Like correction can happen. It doesn't have to happen in the moment. And I think that was something that I didn't understand early on in my parenting journey. I just felt like, especially when they were little, like I have to correct them now, or they're not going to know, they're not going to have context. And maybe there's a time and space for that. This is incredibly nuanced. But if you, especially when they're that little and you're worried about them not being able to tie back later, then it's probably not something that needs to be corrected because it wasn't intentional, right? Like Ross Green has that quote that kids are doing the best they can. And so if they're having a meltdown or they just destroyed your wall or whatever, we can trust that something is happening for that child in that moment and to pause and be present before we jump to conclusions. Like I always tell my kids, when you assume you're wrong, and they'll tell me, cause like I'll make an assumption and start correcting them. They're like, you're assuming and you're wrong. And I'm like, I am, you're right.
Yeah, I think that's actually really helpful. And it's making me think about a few different examples, but I think that's been one thing I'm really grateful about this home education journey is not reacting too quickly and giving myself, and it's taken practice too. And I still react at times, absolutely. But really understanding that our kids are doing something for a reason. Like there's a reason behind it, whatever it is, but they're not just doing something for the sake of doing it. And I know throughout the conversation, we'll probably talk quite a bit with like about, I want to say like more academic examples of how our kids are naturally learning, maybe to like read numbers, writing. But I also keep coming back to like this one example I have, which I'm not sure if I've shared on the podcast before or not, but it sticks out in my mind so much. My eldest was always been a mover. So very, what's that called, Kelly, when you're the learner?
Kinesthetic
thank learner. You. So like when my eldest was younger, I was like, oh, that's the kind of learner you are. Like you learn like through your body and moving your body. And that came up in a lot of different ways as far as like, what are the rules of our house? Right. So like, this was my first. So I'm like, do we allow jumping on the beds? Do we, you know, you question all those things when it's your kid and you know, how you were raised and what will other people think and stuff. And I just realized, I mean, it was apparent that this child had to move, you know, not just to learn, but just to be themselves and to be happy. And how do we respect that and give space for that and opportunities for that. And one thing that was really cool, I want to say it would have been around the age of, oh gosh, now it's been a little while. So maybe 7 years old or 8 years old. And this kid taught themselves, and lots of kids do this, and it's kind of a non-academic example, but learned how to cartwheel. And I'm not joking. This kid would cartwheel at least 50 times a day. Like there was a part of this phase where the cartwheels were happening. If we had to go from point A to point B, it was cartwheels. And it meant cartwheels in the house. And I remember when that started happening, I was like, oh, because my first thought is like, you're going to get hurt. And I have a memory of doing a cartwheel in my basement as a child. And I like whacked my foot or I think it was my ankle on like a dresser or something. And it really, really hurt. So that probably was why I was like, ooh, no cartwheels in the house, right? But I had to pause and I had to kind of think about, are cartwheels in the house not okay? This kid clearly is learning how to perfect a cartwheel, and not for the goal of being able to do a perfect cartwheel. I don't think they saw someone else do a cartwheel and thought, I'm going to learn how to do that and master that and be the best at cartwheels. But I'm not kidding. And it was there's probably lots of examples like this one, but I think because it was a cartwheel, so you couldn't miss when the cartwheels were happening. I was like, this is something that needs to be done. And I'm sure there was like a sensory reason behind it as well. But I just like to think about just being open-minded, I guess, as homeschool parent or any parent, about why our kids are spending so much time, like what something's going on. Like, and we don't need to always figure out exactly what it is, but just trusting that something's going on in their brain. And this is the moment for them to be spending time on that. And and I just like to give that one because it's I don't know what else to call it, but kind of like a non-academic example, because I know that's probably parents are like, oh, great, your kid can cartwheel. You know, unless they're in gymnastics and you're really hoping they become a great gymnast, you're like, oh, great, cartwheel. But there's definitely obviously still value in it. And I think sometimes it's a little bit easier in our society or culture to see the value in like learning how to read or something like that. Mm-hmm.
I just have to jump in fast, Ashley, with when you're talking about, this is maybe slightly off topic, but maybe it isn't, I don't know. When you're talking about the cartwheel, and you said you have a memory of getting hurt or hitting something in your basement. And so, slightly funny story, not that many years ago, I think I might've actually been 40. So I like to do dive rolls. So we were at my parents' place in an upstairs bedroom, and the kids and I must not have been, I think they would have been a little bit younger. I was probably late 30s. Anyway, and we're just playing up there. So I'm showing them how I used to put these two beds together and do these dive rolls. And so I was way more into it than they were. So anyway, I did like a running one. I did a dive roll. It was like a kind of an airborne thing, and my heel went into the plaster of the wall. This is the biggest joke. So my kids found it funny. My husband still, he can't even, he just howls with laughter because all he remembers is he said, you know, here you are at 40. He goes, all I can remember is you going down and telling your father, hey, dad. I have something to tell you. I was just doing a dive roll and now there's a hole in your wall.
Sorry.
I just want to say, like, we don't always know why we're doing things. It's just Like, oh,
it's my God. True. And when you're a parent, because I have not been one to be good at embracing the mess in the house. And I've thought about this because I don't feel proud about it, but it's, you know, just kind of reality with the messes. And I had to really work on it at times, just be like, breathe, it's fine. It's just, and it's not that I knew things could get cleaned up. I wasn't worried about that really, but it was more so I think, and I only have two, so, but I just found, especially when they were younger, there was a lot going on. There's a lot to do. Like, we can all relate to that, right? Like, you already have all these tasks. You're taking care of these kids and it's a lot of work. You've got laundry, all the things. The to-do list is already so long. And then you see your kids going from like some days, right? Like one mess to the next mess. And I'm just like, I see my to-do list just growing. And I had to really, and I don't think that's easy for any parent, but I know that that was something that I really struggled with. But yeah, knowing, like keeping and having reminders and just reminding myself that like these kids are doing these big movements, or because we have holes in the walls too, multiple holes. They're doing these things, you know, whether it be messes or whatever, for a really good reason. So it's just, and I think that was going to be part of the discussion too, right? Like holding that space, providing that space. And sometimes it means dedicating a room for like the messy space, or maybe it is in your house, making an agreement or whatever, no cartwheels or running dive rolls in the house, but here's a space where I'll make sure that you get to regularly or something. So it is like very individual, not individual, but every family has to do what is going to make sense for them. But for me, it was just about kind of keeping an open mind, thinking, okay, what is actually going to work for all of us, not just for the kids, but for all of us? What can I be comfortable with too? And then also knowing that we can change our minds later. That's yeah. Absolutely. We say that a lot around here. Everybody's allowed to change their minds.
I love that so much, Ashley. That was something I wrote down with your earlier share, to just like make sure that we looped back to like, you have the right to change your mind. My kids have the right to change their mind. They know that I have the right to change their mind. I think that is such a powerful permission we can give ourselves. And I also wanted to jump in here and say about the permission for us to own our frustration with our environment. Like, you were just, I don't know if anyone else's blood pressure was rising as you were like describing the messes that they make as they travel through the day, and you're kind of already overwhelmed and you don't really want to impede on them because you know it's not intentional, but like you're getting flooded with emotions, you're getting overwhelmed, your invisible load of motherhood just doubled because you either have to do the cleanup yourself or you've got to have them partner with you, or you're trying to tell them the whole thing, right? We all know how that works. And it's just like, sometimes it's okay to, and oftentimes rather than try to muscle through that, we can actually share that with our kids, because if we don't, then something later on that day is going to push you over the edge. And then you're just going to lose your mind and you're going to have your momster moment. I like to say the momster, and my kids know it. Like, I'm like, I'm sorry. That's an opportunity for repair when we lose it with our kids. But sometimes like what I do, and I'm a verbal processor, so it helps me to hear my frustration and it helps them like know where I am. I would say something like, in this example, like, hey guys, I'm getting overwhelmed because everywhere I look, there's stuff everywhere and it's making me feel anxious. I'm going to step outside. I'll be right back. And it's kind of that pause, right? Where it's just like putting you on notice how I'm doing right now. I go outside. It's nice out there. It's nice and organized because it's nature. I step back inside and then I'm like, hey, do you think we can take 15 minutes and race the clock and clean this room up, or something like that, to where it's just like, and they've had that moment to be like, oh yeah, okay. And then we're doing it together. So a lot of times that works nicely, but just being able to, at some point, be able to share with our children before we blow, it kind of like lets a little steam out the pressure valve.
Yeah. And I think too, like recognizing that we're all working with different environments, different amounts of space, different types of space, maybe a spouse that's sleeping, you know, if they're on shift or something like that. So I think too, for me, I just always like to say it's also not about, I think we can get in our heads around like it's either the kids are ruling the roost or the parents are ruling the roost. And I think, you know, what we're talking about is this collaborative conversation where, you know, we can say exactly that. Like, yeah, you know, Kelly, I need some space. I need to go outside. I can't remember what your sentence was about I loved that. It's nice and organized because it's nature or something like that.
Because your house is like chaotic. You step outside, you're like, oh, look, there's a blue sky and a tree.
Yeah, exactly.
And look at the neighbor's yard. My yard doesn't look like that. I feel so much better. Whatever.
Right. It's always good when the neighbors take care of their stuff.
Or it's your yard. You're like, oh, no, I can't even go outside. That's when you go to Instagram.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Get your organization fixed. But yeah, so I think, you know, I think it's tricky because we're wanting to leave space, but we sometimes do have some limits, right? I don't think we're talking about absolutely no limits or putting our own needs on the back burner, but it's just, sometimes it's literally just that pause of, you know, Kelly, you described with that moment with the cream, and April, I picture at that moment with the foam soap where you could have just said, I mean, it's just so, why are we, you know, but you took that moment to see what it was that your son was interested in. Even though it was so much different than the way you would have looked at the same object. So sometimes it's just that pause. Mm-hmm. It's not even a yes or a no. It's, I don't know, allowing that time somehow.
If I can just, I just wanted to circle back to the cartwheel story, Ashley, since it was so visual. I appreciated that story because it was fun, but I also appreciated the point that you raised about valuing the non-academic learning. I think for me, that has been a huge one, and maybe this is an unpopular opinion, but at some point early in my homeschooling parenting journey, I started thinking about all the things that, you know, I wanted our kids to learn and what was really important and what really mattered. And, you know, I used to teach fourth and fifth grade. So I thought about, I kind of compared what my kids were doing to what I used to teach in the classroom. And I really started to realize that there's really nothing that happens in all of those early years academically that we couldn't probably learn in 6 weeks, you know, in eighth or ninth grade, when we're a little more mature, we're more interested, we're more ready. You know, a child who doesn't learn how to add, you know, double digits when they're six or seven, you know, how long would it take for them to figure that out in eighth grade? But it's sort of those ideas. And it made me realize that as a homeschooling parent, my emphasis has really been on the idea that if it's important to my kids, then I want to let them do it. And I think it was the Simplicity Parenting book, maybe. Have y'all read that one? I think it's Tim Payne, maybe. But there was something in there about competence leading to confidence. And that really stuck with me, and I felt like, wow, you know, you can see it. It's so easy to see that when we let them lead, you know, like you said earlier, Ashley, it's like we don't know where they're going, we don't know why they're interested in this. And Kelly, you mentioned the same thing. It's like, I don't really know what's going on right now, but I'm going to sit back and I'm just going to watch this happen, or I'm going to ask them some questions and see how this evolved. But it's like you give them the time and space to do the thing that's really meaningful to them and to get really good at that. And that is going to give them the confidence that they need to tackle all those other challenges later, especially some of the big academic ones that maybe they're not so motivated to jump into. They're going to have the confidence to feel like they can really do anything if you give them the time and space to get really good at the stuff that they love early on. So a couple of, you know, just examples of that, whether it's, you know, riding a bike or blowing bubbles or drawing, singing, telling jokes, it's like we had probably at least a year, 2 years, it's actually sort of still happening in my world. My son is obsessed with trick shots. I don't know if y'all are familiar with this. It started with, you know, like Dude Perfect, I think, when he was four. But it's, you know, the bottle flips and the trick shots. And But it is just amazing to me. There is nothing that brings that child joy like landing a bottle flip. And he will do it, you know, kind of like the cartwheels. I've got this sound in the house of this bang, bang, bang. I'm like, oh, there he is with the water bottle again. And it's like, but they figure it out, right? He's got the empty water bottle and he fills it, you know, one third full. And it's all these details that go into it. They study it and they practice it and they figure it out. And when that thing lands, it's like, you know, the roof is lifting off the house in here. Because they feel so good that they've figured it out. And, you know, both of my kids will do that together. And there have definitely been weeks where they have spent, you know, hours doing that. And it's like, sure, you might not see the value in that. But if you really think about the steps that they've taken to achieve this and how much it means to them, and most importantly, the confidence that they're getting from doing the thing that they love and doing it well, I feel like there's nothing more important than spending time on those things and just letting them take the lead on that and watching where it goes.
I love that so much, April, that entire story and all of the knowledge and wisdom and life learning and experience that comes behind that, right? Like, and that was such a great story to illustrate. What is most important is confidence and your child's understanding of themselves and being able to explore that and be a confident learner and someone who can pursue hard things. It reminds me, I used this study in some of my coaching and I had it already up, but it was research done like over 100 years ago by Harvard, Carnegie, and Stanford. And it concluded that 85% of job success comes from having well-developed soft and people skills. And only 15% of success comes from academics. And mm-hmm. I think that that's kind of like a great tie-in to everything that you were just saying. If we know who we are, we've had the space to develop our confidence. We've had the support and trust and relationship with our parents and our family dynamic. Yeah, that 9 weeks, you can learn grammar. You know, Liana Francisco talks a lot about how she didn't do any kind of academic math until she was ready to go to college. And so she did all the preliminaries, like, I don't remember exactly, but in a very short period of time, she caught herself up and was able to go to college. She has a master's now. And so that kind of is another story to tag in here about the importance of allowing our children. And then just for those who might be listening and are, might be I don't want to say spectacle. What am I trying to say? Skeptical. Thank you. I was like, what's that word? everything I was hearing about your son, and I know you know this, but you know, I just, as you were telling this story about like his interest was spawned at a young age by Dude Perfect and doing these trick shots. And so he got curious and he wanted to understand, and I don't know if this is the same child that was with the foam soap, but wanted to understand the inner workings of this. So just that mind of wanting to do it for himself, wanting to, and he sounds like this child with the trick shots sounds like a hands-on learner, and that you allowed him this space. And then all the physics that go into just throwing that bottle and how much he was learning and building a library of physics that later on, if he gets into something or needs to take a physics class, oh, I know all about this because I spent so much of my childhood managing trick shots. And then you think about the process that he had to go through from one step to the next step to the next step, the volume that he was probably learning, how much water needed to be in that bottle, measuring whether he was using it very scientifically or not, estimating, and then recording his results, observing his results, whether he wrote it down or not. All of that is science and engineering and math. And then he probably was telling or had a sibling and there was a conversation. That's communication. All writing and reading is communication when we're not there. So he could tell you the story later. He could write it down. Maybe it was videoed. All of that is language arts. And so in this one interest of him had deep meaning, he was using all his subjects.
Mm-hmm. And then thank you, Kelly, for articulating that so beautifully. I feel like those are the things that are going on in my head that sometimes just don't come out of my mouth in the way that that you're able to do that. I'm very impressed and grateful and wanted to share as well, just in that same train, that he was then able to make videos of himself doing the trick shots that just added this whole other creative element, presentation, teaching piece to it. And it just blows my mind how all of that just evolves completely naturally. And you almost, just like you were saying, Erin, if you didn't think about it, you would miss it. You would think that, oh no, this is just a kid playing with a bottle, like doing dude perfect stuff. And there is so much rich learning that is happening there. And also I feel like it really, these are all things that these children are going to remember, right? Ashley, the cartwheels, like nobody is going to forget those cartwheels and these bottle flips. And probably, I don't know how old your daughter was, Kelly, with the cream, but it's like, these become part of their core memories, right? And it's like these learning experiences that will stay with them. And they probably don't realize exactly what they're learning. But like you said, Kelly, about the physics class, it's like, I can't tell you everything that he's learning while he's doing this, but his brain is going to remember that. And his brain is going to be able to retain that and apply it to all the connected experiences going forward. And to me, that's just what this is about, right? It's like you introduce them to as many of these rich learning experiences as you can when they're young, and they've got these little, you know, starting points in their brain that they will then attach all this further learning to. And it's amazing to me how our brains work. Just kind of, yeah, mind blowing, right? Literally.
April, I feel like I have, so my youngest son, when you're describing a lot of the things actually you're describing with your guy, like also he was and is a huge Dude Perfect fan. It hasn't worn off at all. But he was like, did you say great?
I'm just thinking, oh wow. I'm not sure how I should feel about that.
Older coming to it, so maybe the novelty will wear off more quickly for your son. But he would spend, and he would do this with he and his friend had these, they were called fingerboards. They were these little flip, and they would spend huge amounts of time trying, you know, just on our kitchen table trying to, and they'd set up, you know, Kelly, you're talking about physics, right? Like they would set up all these different setups and barricades and props and but even with like a regular size skateboard, he would be on the driveway doing this same thing for like the afternoon, trying to do like, you know, some particular flip or kick flip or whatever. And I think in our busyness as parents, it's so easy. I mean, sometimes it's even relieving. It's kind of like, okay, you know, this one's doing that right now. And you almost just like check it off because it's not something you need to pay attention to. And technically it really isn't something you need to pay attention to, but it's fun to pay attention to it when you really think about, like what comes to mind for me too, is just the perseverance, just that perseverance to be able to stick with something and to meet a goal that isn't important to anybody else but you, right? I mean, of course, we are excited when our kids get to the point where they've, you know, figured out how to do something they've been working at. But there's no extrinsic pressure to learn to do a kickflip with, like, nobody's, I shouldn't say that. There probably is some peer, right? Like, you know, there's probably some peer accolades or whatever that you get. But I think even when he was younger, before he met other people that skateboarded, it was like that. He just liked, kind of like you're saying, these different tricks. But the other thing I want to build on a couple things that I think you said. You were talking about, I think he had done a video or he had, and it reminded me a little bit of a couple of other things I've seen you, share. One was about the fishing, where when he learned that some of those new tricks from that older man, he was then within like the next day or two teaching a group of kids, like random kids on the dock.
It was actually, Erin, that all happened within minutes. I was on cloud nine when I left that fishing dock because I truly couldn't believe that this man, who by the way did not speak any English, but had been watching my son for a while because they'd been on the dock together for a couple of days, spent time to teach him this new trick. And then these kids at a distance were watching. So my son pulled up a fish and all these kids started cheering. And then they all came down to see the fish, and they'd been at a camp at the community center. So they all ran down to see this fish. And so my son took the fish off the hook, let them touch the fish. And then they all wanted to take turns with his fishing rod. So it was wild and crazy chaos. But I was also super impressed with the staff person, who was the only camp person who let her kids come down to this dock, because of course all the things that can happen at a fishing dock. But these kids, it was so amazing to watch them all then like lined up, taking turns just to get in there with the fishing rod, and to see my son like letting them hold the fishing rod and doing it, but also like giving them the tips and helping them out. And it was just like, wow, like this is natural learning. Like I have never seen it before, learning and teaching. And I was learning so much just from watching them.
Well, but that's what I'm thinking too. Like, so his learning, because this is similar to the son I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. There's the learning, which is for themselves. But then I don't think all people are like this, but then he wants to share that information. And it's like, not in like an authoritative way or an expert way, just like, look at this. Are you interested in doing this? Maybe I can help you. Maybe I can show you, like in a very supportive way. And I don't know about you. I think for me, I am a little bit more of a big picture thinker. And so when he will come to me with details, that's been a practice that I've had to really work at, because it's hard for me to listen to all the steps that are going into something. It's really tedious for me. And so like for me that, yeah, there, I think that there's definitely been some work
thank
there.
You. You know, like, thank you for saying that.
yeah. But it's fascinating, right? That's a piece of the learning though, is the retelling. For my daughter, I could try to pry it out of her. She's whatever, she's learned it, she's doing it, but they are so different. And then it shows us different things about our own learning tendencies, I think,
right.
And our capacity for patience. And
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's ELA right there. Right. And I'm totally right there with you, Erin, on like all the details. You're like, oh, wow, I got lost. I don't even know what's going on. And I only tuned out for like 5 seconds because it was painful, and I'm back and I'm still lost. And, you know, when we think about, I think everyone here was traditionally schooled themselves. You had to write the paper, right? Oh my gosh, you had to write the paper. And then it's going to get red marked. And then I got to like rewrite it. I got to remember the rules. My parents have to help me. And then I'm going to get a lecture from the parents who are like good natured and trying to help. But it's just, oh my gosh, just stop. I want to go play. Instead, so that's one way you can work on your writing skills. Instead, this is like, hey, mom, blah, 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 blah. And then we're just holding that space, right, as the mom. And it's painful. But, you know, while we hold that space, we are allowing this child to verbally process, and they're getting it out there, and they are self-editing and learning that, how to self-edit. And then we can help. Like, it might be like, sometimes I'm like, okay, so I'm hearing you, I'm going to restate what I'm hearing, and then we're going to speed this up because you're getting lost in the weeds. Right. And I might really not be able to listen to much more. Or sometimes I can hold all the space, and it's different for everybody, but that is the editing process, that you don't have to be writing it down. You're editing, and because all writing is communication. And so hearing that, I love that. And then I love how the retelling reinforces what happened, right? And it's a different way of when it comes out of your body and it goes somewhere else, and then you've reassimilated it. And then I love like the mixed stage learning that was happening on the dock, April, yeah. Where like this older man had been sitting there, and he's like, I'm gonna rock his world. Let me show you this trick. And it worked. Your son is just like having this moment. And then he hears these other kids sharing in his moment, right? Like, yeah. how affirming is that? And then those kids had a camp counselor that was like giving them permission and was okay and recognized the magical moment that had just kind of like been strewn for her or him. Let the kids go down to the dock. And then there was this community moment of collaboration as they all shared in his experience. And of course he was sharing, and this is what's so beautiful about natural learning, because if we could use, I get this question all the time. I don't know if you guys do, but like, how does this look for like, if I have 7 kids or if I have 4 kids, and how do I do this? How do I do this 90 minutes full day? How do I do this natural learning? And it's like this, because it's all about relationship, and everyone was celebrating your son's achievement on the dock. And then they were curious, just like he was. And then he's sharing, he's reinforcing the trick that he learned. All these kids are learning it. And it's that mixed age play that really comes into community and collaboration. And that's how natural learning works, where the school system puts us in an achievement ladder where you need to get the A or you're not good enough. And that's where a lot of this bullying comes into, because if we can collaborate and share and celebrate one another, the rising tide lifts all boats, right? In natural learning. And then when we have to like one up someone to be on the team or to get the grade or to be on the honor roll, like that's divisive. Sorry, I got kind of radical there. I'm done.
Yeah, no, that's
with you.
Because Kelly, you made a good point about the fact that the man then is like he's doing the teaching and then he's witnessing the passing on. Was he still on the dock when your son?
Oh yeah, yeah. It was funny to watch him sort of step to the side a little bit and watch, and but the smile on his face. Oh, just the whole thing was so like it was like magical. It was like unschooling magic.
That's very cool.
I want to say that I do think I used to be a summer camp counselor, and I enjoyed it so much that I was like, I want to be the summer camp supervisor and do this every single summer. and I didn't realize it at the time. I thought, oh, this is a great space to practice being with kids to be a teacher, right? But looking back, I just think, because I don't think too many parents sign their kids up for summer camp and really think that they're going, not that they think that they're not going to learn anything while they're there, but I don't know that I certainly didn't realize everything that was happening. And I think in summer camps, because like one big reason is it is often mixed age, you know, depending on the camp and stuff, some are probably more mixed age than others. But even like a lot of times the camp counselors are like, I was in my early 20s, I guess, when I did it. And I think we even had some like teen volunteers. There's a lot of mixed age going on there, and it does create such a great environment, but a great learning environment for all the like social, emotional stuff and everything we were just talking about. But I think about that quite a bit, because there's probably a lot more value in summer camps than a lot of parents realize. And a lot of magic moments like that, that maybe go unnoticed and not celebrated as much. And I don't want to, the other thing that's coming up for me that I don't think we've touched on yet, but where I'm seeing kind of similar things that we're talking about, is when my kids are playing, I'm going to say video games. I don't know if that's accurate anymore, because when I talk about the video games, I wasn't a big video gamer when I was a kid, but like Super Mario Kart and whatever the Nintendo games were then, we just called them video games. Now it's very different, right? Like when they're playing Roblox and Fortnite, I still just call them video games. Maybe that's right. Maybe it's just online gaming now. I'm not sure. But that's what I'm talking about, because I see a lot of, with my kids anyway, mostly my oldest, my youngest isn't playing online with friends too much yet anyway, but my oldest has been for a while now, and it's mixed age. And that just kind of happened naturally. It's just kind of based on who was interested in the same games. And just going back to a little bit what you were saying, I think, Erin, what I was seeing, or what I do see, and I have to pay attention, because as they get older, they kind of, I guess, just need me a little bit less. And they've got their online friends now to play with, too. So I have to be intentional about spending time, like just paying attention to what online gaming is offering, I guess, and what that experience is like. But as far as like the personal goal setting, the perseverance, I know you had mentioned that, Erin, when we see that in our kids trying to master something or reach different goals, there's so much of that with, I mean, it probably depends on what game you're playing, I guess, too. But trying out their own ideas and testing them out, like really being brave and experimenting different things. And sometimes doing that alone without friends, but also sometimes doing that when there's friends watching too, and could potentially watch you, you know, fail or whatnot when you test something out. And there's a whole bunch of things here, but the other thing I just quickly thought of too was the leadership skills that I'm seeing, and how they take turns leading different missions or whatever it is that they do. I won't pretend to totally understand anymore because I'm kind of getting a little bit left behind. But there's just so much natural learning that happens when that gaming is taking place. And I think that's another thing that it could be pretty easy to miss, especially if they're not doing it, you know, right in front of you. And you just think like, oh, they're just playing video games or they're playing online with their friends. And when I pay attention, even for a short amount of time, I just can start to really see, and like, I haven't even mentioned all of it, right? Like, my eldest really, I don't know, playing video games like Minecraft, chatting in Roblox, like the reading skills that developed mm-hmm. during that was amazing. Also, like, my eldest is really good with numbers and like really likes numbers and pattern recognition and stuff. So they'll come and talk to me about what they're doing. And so going back to being a little bit like, okay, pay attention, try to understand what's happening. And I do try to still play a little bit of the game so that I can understand, but I mean, we're just not, you don't have time to try out all the things that they do all the time. So I get a little bit lost, but like it's like a whole world that they learn about, right? And there's money involved lots of times, or some type of like numbers and like the goals that are happening and all the planning that's involved with these games. Just there's so much there. And yeah, I just wanted to mention that because I know not everybody's kids are into video games or online gaming, but that I think is a pretty big popular one. And it's helpful to know that there's a lot going on there.
I am so glad you brought that up, Ashley, because when you were talking earlier about the links to things that we think about as academic, and like I can think about conversations I've had where I had no, for the reason you said, I was kind of like compartmentalizing it, like, oh, they're gaming right now, like as a separate thing from the learning that they would be doing, like more, I guess, as relaxation, which we know learning happens through everything, but still, you know, our brains are sometimes thinking otherwise. And just hearing my son talk about like statistics, and so it was, I think this particular conversation was in relation to like NBA basketball, and just the way that he was rhyming things off and comparing them to other things, and I was like, oh wow. I can remember another game that they were playing, and just like the geography and the history, I was mind blown. And I think then too, so you have those kind of like traditional academic subjects that you can divide things into. But then there are these pieces around, and I mean, Kelly had mentioned like soft skills. So online etiquette is huge, right? But then it's not even just online etiquette, it's going to be specific to the particular game, to the particular team. So there, I think there are some big picture online etiquette skills, but then you're also having to finesse them a little bit and kind of find your way into a new group of people or a new team, or maybe the particular rules or conventions of a game. I think like those are so hard to measure, right? But I don't know. They're very valuable. But yeah.
And it's also like the risk, right? Like as we're talking it, that's one thing to add to this conversation about screens and I'm with you, Ashley, video games, online gaming, whatever the terminology is, you know what we're talking about. But you know, and I don't know how it is where you guys live. We live in a town and we have a local community, and my younger kids still play outside with other kids in the neighborhood, but there are more and more kids just not outside, especially as they start to get older. And so when I think about like what I was up to as a teenager, what I was up to as a young preteen, there was just more opportunity for unstructured play with kids around my age in the preteen and teen years than there is now. And so the risky play that you would like, I remember one of our friends were like 15 and somebody was driving. Most of us weren't able to drive yet. And we decided to walk through a drive-through. Like, this is just like the kind of the dumb stuff you do when you're 15 years old. And so we had like, we thought it was by weight. And so, I don't know, there were like 12 of us. And so we're this huddled up little group trying to mimic a car to see if we could trigger the drive-through, you know, and it wasn't working. We found out, oh, it's magnetic, what triggers it, yeah. Not weight. But you know, so we're little scientists, little 15-year-old scientists, we're laughing and everything. And we must not be the only ones because you're not allowed to do that anymore. But that was like risky play, right? It's kind of like tomfoolery, but it was this risky play where you were able to like somebody, it was somebody's idea. Somebody influenced the rest of us. We all glommed on board. I don't really remember all the details, but so that's one of the things I was up to as a 15-year-old. And that, depending on your location, what's going on in your world where you live, that may or may not be available to your preteen or teen. And the online gaming space is a chance and ability to exercise those muscles because they're looking there. It's a developmental plane where they're looking for where they belong in the world and they're looking for meaning and challenges and worth, right? And where do they fit? And so this space, this virtual space for them opens up a lot of opportunity for that risky play. So I wanted to kind of bring that into this conversation too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Something that I had kind of thought about, talking about, I think we've covered it to a degree, but, I'd still be interested maybe in just seeing if there's anything anybody wants to add to it, because I think that it's helpful to think about. I think that the question I had in mind is like, were we surprised to notice natural play coming up, or sort of what, you know, maybe what was our prior, how do we imagine learning prior? And I think it might still be useful because I think that this gets into a lot of probably the de-schooling things that we, you know, talk about on social media and in online spaces. And I'm, you know, I know Ashley and April, you both came from a teaching background, and I'm kind of interested I'm interested in how many prior teachers end up homeschooling and then often also move into more of a self-directed or an unschooling way of doing things. Does that feel like it was a big shift for either of you? Sorry, I'm kind of putting you on the spot. The question just came to me as we were talking. Well, I think it is a big shift. I think I'm answering my own question, but I guess, what do you remember about that shift, or do you remember moments where things kind of started to come together in a different way for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can. Yeah, it is. And it is kind of hard to remember. I think I had some specific moments. I know I've shared a little bit here, but it might be helpful to just, or for people who haven't listened before, talk a bit about when we like officially started homeschooling, I guess. And it like it was during the pandemic, right? So I've talked about how that's when my eldest was in grade one, so was 6 years old at the time. And that helped a lot. I think my experience and my worries specifically would have been a lot different if we had been at an older age. But because he was six, I remember thinking like, and numbers have always been a strength. I was like, okay, we're just going to focus mostly like on reading. And at this point I was like, who knows how long this pandemic will last for, they'll be back in school soon. And it was so quick because of the way they are that I was like, okay, this kid does not like being directly taught. And I had a lot of experience teaching kids to read in a very hands-on, fun, engaging way. Like that was, you know, how I set all of this up and short, like we're not spending a couple hours at the table every day. No 6-year old wants to do that, especially this one. They're moving all the time. But it very much so was because of his personality, that it really forced me, not forced me, but I just, it, it, I was like, yeah, I have to put our relationship first. I had already been, you know, doing things that way since he was born. But that just really, like, if he had been more like my second, who's a little bit more obedient, what a word to use. But, you know, just one of those kids who's, I mean, less and less so, thankfully. Yes, go with the flow. Then, I mean, that would have been okay too. But I think it was really helpful that my eldest was strong in this is not going to work for me. And therefore, I had to find a different way. And maybe it was also because the pandemic allowed everything to slow down that I didn't feel panicked. I didn't feel rushed. I didn't feel like I wasn't in my mind thinking, oh my gosh, he's going to fall behind. He's going to fall so behind because all the other kids were not at school too. And I definitely wasn't convinced that this was going great for all the other parents and or all the other families, right? Trying to learn at home. So I think it's a bit of a unique experience coming from teaching to homeschooling because it was during the pandemic. If it had been that I had been brave enough to take that leap outside of the pandemic, that could have been a pretty different experience. And then because it's my personality to like seek out help, seek out information, I started coming across like Robin's Honey, I'm Homeschooling the Kids podcast was one of the first ones, thankfully, that I found and was listening to. But, you know, the different books and all the things that we listen to and we read to when we first get into homeschooling, that allowed me then to really start to see learning in a different way and learn about this thing called natural learning and really how kids do that through play and what that looks like. And then because my two were six and I guess three turning four, they were just playing so much all the time anyway that I just had to be with them, which I was all the time, especially then. I started to be able to see it. So pandemic was an awful thing, but that was something like the pandemic did allow us as a family the space to, and me personally, to really just take that teacher hat off and the time to see things differently. So mm-hmm. I hope that made sense. But mm-hmm. April, I don't know if that was a little bit of a different experience for you or not. Cause I know your kids are kind of around, kind of similar ages to mine.
Yeah, no, I was actually going to say, I think we had a very similar, I think our first children are very similar in their personalities.
Yeah.
I like to say that mine was born a teenager. He and I just like, we just butt heads constantly. And when we started thinking about homeschooling, I knew nothing about homeschooling, like absolutely nothing about homeschooling. I didn't know about the homeschooling styles. I had not ever envisioned myself being a homeschooling parent. When I came across an old blog post that someone had written that described unschooling, I was like, okay, I can get behind this. I think I can do this. But it was because I knew from the get-go that my child was not going to let me sit down and teach him anything ever. you know, now he will be 10 in January and we're still on that page. But what was most fascinating to me about all of this was that, you know, I think like most of us, just this assumption that like if a child is going to learn how to read, you have to teach them. And I remember talking to him very specifically about this when he was probably 5 or 6, because he was not interested at all. And I said, you know what, bud, I'm trying to help you out here. I don't want you to be, you know, you go to a restaurant with your baseball team. I don't want you to be the only one who can't read the menu. I'm trying to, you know, find all different, you know, natural ways to inspire him to want to learn. And he was just like, you know, lady, this is coming from you. I'm not interested. Like that's sort of the dynamic that happens there. I love him obviously, but this is, these moments that we have. And so I think become an expert in managing him and really like, if I want him to do something, I will never come out and just point blank ask him or tell him I want to teach him or anyhow. So this whole reading situation came up and I was so stressed. I was trying to let it go. I'm like, no, trust the process, let it go. It's okay. No one's going to test him. No, like you, it's okay. He's doing so many other things. Don't worry about reading. And then, you know, on like the worst, hardest days, we're like, oh my gosh, we've done nothing. We're not learning anything. I'm failing him. And he doesn't even know how to read. And it was like, right. That's just, they take like a really bad day to like a really, really much worse day. So anyhow, in the middle of that, at some point I listened to one, or I was not a podcast person at this time, but I think I was desperate and I pulled out a podcast episode from, I can't even tell you who the podcaster was or what the episode was, but it was Peter Gray being interviewed by a woman with a British accent. And I remember the interview, and what was this, the standout moment to me, the words were that came out of his mouth, and he sounded very convincing. If a child grows up in a literate household, they will learn to read. And I just, even now I'm repeating this to you and I feel it, the weight of that in my gut, because it was one of those things where I was like, I want to believe this so badly. And I kind of felt desperate, to be honest. I was like, I knew, to your point, Ashley, I was going to ruin my relationship with my son if I tried to push reading. And at the same time, ooh, I can like feel this in my throat as I'm explaining it. At the same time, I knew that obviously he needed to know how to read. Like that was not something that was optional. So I sat with that, and I would like to also add, I think that if you know that your child does not have a learning disability or a learning challenge, or I think that that caveat needs to be put in there, because I don't know that this would have played out the same way. So this was when he was 5 or 6 that I listened to that, and I thought, you know what, I am going to try to let this go. I am going to, he loves to be read to, still loves to be read to. And so we kept that up. We kept reading to him and just let him do all the other things that he loved to do. And then, you know, fast forward probably 2 years. Okay. So this is 2 years of me trying not to think about reading and how much it was sort of weighing on me that I had not done this as a former teacher with my child. And so I will remember this moment forever. We were heading to bed one night and we were going to read the story. And I said, you know, I think it's time for us to like probably think about teaching you how to read again. Could we start with this? You know, I picked up one of the reader books. I had never heard my child read aloud in his entire life. And he was, yeah, 7, maybe 7 and a half, going on 8, something like that. And so I said, why don't we just start with this book? And I was really preparing myself for like having to start at the very beginning. And he picked up the book and he read the whole book out loud. And I just, you know, fell on the floor. And it's one of those things where, you know, like part of me didn't want to make a big deal about it. And the other part was like, oh, I think I just said, oh, you know how to read. Okay. Like this massive sense of relief, because now I didn't have to start from scratch. I didn't have to worry about what I was going to do to that relationship. I didn't have to worry probably about the judgment that I know was like going to be sitting on me if somebody asked him to read something he couldn't read. Like it was all those things, right, in this moment. And then, you know, you go straight from relief to like, so how the heck did he do that? Like, how did this happen? And I remember like trying not to like jump on him in that moment and be like, okay, wait, but how did you? I was sort of like, okay, I'm your mom, and I've been here with you every day, watching you do all the things, and I, you know, am trained as a teacher. I should probably know how you learned how to read, but how did you learn how to read? So he could not, I've asked him on several occasions. I've even asked him again recently how he thought, and he's just not that kind of kid that's going to be like giving me the answers. But if I had to explain it now, I think it was a combination of board games, YouTube, videos, probably just like text messaging. Like he didn't really even do a lot of texting, but like sometimes he would be FaceTiming with his older cousins and they would start like a little chat with him. But I really believe that it was his fascination and passion for baseball that took him right to where he needed to go, because it was all about the baseball cards. You know, he's got those cards out, he's learning everything about the players and the teams and where they're from and the stats and everything else. So I knew that the math was coming in there, that real world context for math. But then I also believe a ton of his literacy development came through because of baseball and his passion for all of those things. And then it took me probably about another year to realize, oh, wow, he's, you know, learned everything about American history, geography, and pop culture also through baseball, but also like completely self-directed. So it's that to me, like when that moment happened for me, like 2 years of kind of letting it sit and then coming back and seeing that happen, it was like everything that I believed about learning just like went straight upside down. It was like, in my gut, I felt a lot of these things, but to see that in such a concrete way just changed the game entirely. And just like my trust in the process, that was all I needed to know that we're on the right track, that this unschooling, self-directed, natural, values-driven, interest-led, however we want to call it, it works.
And I just want to say, because I think that's it. I'm sure everyone has their different experience for those who've gone from teaching to this, but once you see it,
right,
and then can imagine what our kids' days would be like in the school system.
Oh yeah.
You're just like, yeah, we have to do this. We can't, you know, hopefully we can continue to home educate them, because it's so different in the school. So like the de-schooling process, I mean, right. I don't know. I only know what my experience has been like, but it is, because people will say like, oh, you're homeschooling. Oh my gosh, how do you do that? Oh, you're a teacher. Oh, that's why you're able to homeschool. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I'm like, actually, I think in at least some ways, my teaching background has made it harder in a lot of ways, because learning at home, and this is, I mean, if you don't do it, you won't know this, but like learning at home is so different than learning at school. And then, yeah. And then for like some of our kids, knowing what learning would feel like to them in the school system, as opposed to, you know, what we see them doing now, you're just like,
oh,
you can't unsee it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's
no.
Like that was such a pop. Sorry, April. Did I interrupt you there? Were you okay? No,
not at all. I was just gonna agree with Ashley and say, yeah, it's like at the beginning of the journey, you're like, yeah, you know, I'm gonna try out this homeschooling thing, and we're gonna take it year by year. I think a lot of people have that mentality, and then once you see that and you get that deep with it and you have that personal experience, it's like, no, I cannot send my kids to school. I mean, if they wanted to try it out, sure, that's one thing, but I'm in this now. Like, we're here and we're just going to see it through, because I can't imagine doing something different or having them, like you said, be in that classroom all day. We were there and we're not anymore for, I'm sure, reasons that we could talk about for another entire podcast episode. But so anyhow, Erin, I'm sorry, you probably saw my face saying I was ready to say something. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just wanted to, I think what I was just going to say is that, I think it's why this idea of sort of spot the learning, or, you know, it's not that we need to be, it's not that our kids need to constantly be showing us that they're performing or that they're meeting external goals. But I think what's helpful for us, I think you really kind of just articulated that in a way that probably a lot of people can relate to. Once you do spot the learning, or once you do see that, and you see it like a few times, or for you, I mean, that was a powerful experience in and of itself. That's exactly it. You just kind of see it all the time. And I think I can only speak for myself, but I think it goes through a little bit of an evolution or a cycle of some sort, where it's not that you spend the rest of your life looking for the learning, but I think when you're first kind of coming into this, when you're first trying to figure out what is going to work for your family, it can be really reassuring to look for things in a concrete way. And so for myself, I find that I've like revisited that at different phases. So I would have gone through a period of time when my kids were kind of like, I don't know, just in those years between maybe like my eldest might've been 12 and my youngest might've been 6. And I was feeling good. Like, I felt like we have this homeschool thing down. I just didn't think a lot about it. I was more, you know, early on I did. And then we went through this period of time where we were just kind of sailing. Well, I mean, it's day-to-day life, but you know what I mean? As far as my like questioning philosophy, that kind of thing, we were just kind of sailing. And then, you know, we came into sort of the high school or the teen years. And then I had to respot the learning. And I find even now that my kids are, they're all in their 20s. My youngest is turning 19 next week. So, but now I find myself doing it again, because, which I didn't think I would do. I thought, oh, once they're 18, I'm done. But, you know, not really. So, because I'm still interested, right? I'm still wanting to be supportive and encouraging. So now I find I'm like so fascinated in things I never even would have thought about, just noticing these little pieces of learning. So I do think that it's not that our kids even need to necessarily be thinking we're watching them all the time. And so I'm interested, like, I think you said you didn't want to make a huge deal about it. And that is something that I think about, is the idea of like praise or overpraising. And some kids, you know, maybe if their love language is words of affirmation, they really appreciate that praise. It's not to say praise is wrong, but I think about it when we're like spotting learning that's natural, they're not doing it for performance usually. So I have found I've had to sort of reflect a little bit on how to respond. It depends on the child, it depends on the situation, but they're just going about their day, and it might be checking off a relief box in our head. So I'm just kind of mindful about how I go about that. Yeah, I don't know. Does anybody else relate to that, or does anybody else have any insight in kind of what's worked for them or what their thought process is around that?
I mean, I can go ahead and just share that I think, or maybe I'm even just emphasizing what you said, Erin, because when you, like when I was thinking about this before we started chatting today, I was really thinking about how I've had to really pay close attention to both my kids as to how they receive what I say in reaction or response to anything that they do. And for a while there, I thought I kind of had it figured out. And okay, one kid likes this and the other kid likes that. And they're quite different. They often are. But then I've noticed, and maybe it's just something that kind of changes from day to day or changes as they get older. But they've surprised me at times. So I've kind of, I guess, let go. I thought it was something that I had to figure out, thought I had figured it out. And now I'm just like, oh, maybe it's not something I need to, you know, figure out for sure, but just, I guess, be aware of it. So, and also be okay with if I say something and I get a reaction from them that tells me that they did not appreciate the praise or the comment. Or what happened the other day, actually just yesterday, I had, oh, what was it? Oh, my youngest made a joke. And I was like, oh, that is a really, I'm not a good joke teller, so I'm probably easily impressed too. But I was like, wow, like that was really funny. And he kind of said like, he had made it up or something, like it was his joke. And I was like, oh, like you hadn't heard that joke from someone else. Like you came up with that. And he was like, yeah. So then I'm like, wow, like I was really impressed. And this was all in front of my oldest one. And I already did kind of know that there'd be some like jealousy or a little bit of, oh, I knew that. So that didn't surprise me, but I was surprised that he voiced it. Like he very clearly communicated to me. Of course, now I can't remember exactly. It was just yesterday, but something along the lines of, I've made up my own jokes and you've never made such a big deal out of it. And my making a big deal out of it was very like genuine too. I wasn't trying to celebrate the younger one, like encourage, like, oh, way to go. You should do that more. It was really like, I was like, wow, like that's, I'm really impressed by that. But then I was really impressed how my older one was able to clearly communicate to me how that made him feel. But what's interesting is that he's also the one who I've had to be careful with praise. And I think sometimes it's maybe like what you were saying, Erin, like they're often not doing something to perform or to show us what they can do. They're just doing the thing that they're doing, probably to meet some goal that they have. And then we jump in being like, oh my gosh, that's so cool that you do that. Like, wow, like that's, and they're like, it almost distracts them, I think, a lot of times. And probably, I know at times I feel like I've annoyed them when I've done that. So yeah, I think for me, I'm just at a place where just to be aware that it's like how you make the person feel, right, with what you say. And just sometimes I'm not going to get it right. And sometimes I will, and that's okay. But not everybody is going to receive it in the way that I would hope that they would, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause sometimes it can be a demand, right?
Like, yes.
It can be an applied demand, and that's the energetics behind it. Like everything you were just saying, you explained it so well, Ashley, is like, when I am authentically engaged and it is about them, it's usually well received. I loved how you like said there was a third person in that room who did not receive it well, but that person was regulated enough. Your older child was regulated enough to be able to give voice. Something very similar happened in my home yesterday with my two youngest. And I don't remember what it was, but I remember I was complimenting one and the other one was like, hey, but what about me? You know, like they do. And I remember in that moment, it was very genuine faced in. I wasn't trying to leave this other one out. And I explained that. I was like, hey, I didn't mean to leave you out. I was just, I think it was something my youngest daughter was doing that I was so impressed. I can't remember what it was. Oh, she was pouring milk into her cup. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it quietly with the pause, like, oh dear, like how close are we getting? Cause it was a full carton of milk. And it was just so heavy and she did it. And so I was just relieved and also really impressed. My 10-year-old was like, you don't celebrate me pouring milk. And I was like, oh, that's because you're 10.
Yeah.
And I didn't say because that's because you're 10. I said, because it's because you're so much stronger. I was just impressed that she managed that big, heavy thing. And like immediately, I think my 10-year-old, like her the hair on her back of her neck, her ankles, whatever they are, like calmed down because she just, again, it's that authentic communication and the thank you of thanks for communicating with me. Right. And it's just, and sometimes when the praise is because I'm like, you can read, you know, like I loved hearing April, how you like bit your tongue. Cause I was like, oh, I don't think I would have been able to do that. I think I would have been like dancing because it would have all been about like me, like, oh yay, you can read. I don't even have to do this thing. I've been sweating and like worrying about like, yay. And then I would have ruined the moment. So I'm so impressed that like you were just able to keep it back. Cause it's like, when we over celebrate and it's not, and it is about him reading, right? It was about both. It's like your relief and also being impressed.
I think I was more afraid about like scaring him back into the hole. If that was, I was like, oh no, if I say this, he's just he's never going to do it again.
So that worked out. Yeah. Like, and I think that that's the thing that we're learning too. Like as parents, like we haven't parented before. So as we're trying to like help guide and support and coach these kids, because it is about guiding and supporting and coaching and facilitating rather than teaching. As parents, you know, we're just learning on the job.
Oh, yes.
And sincerity and authenticity and repair takes you a long way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I am just looking at the time. I can't believe how long we've been talking. If people have like a few more minutes, I just wondered on a practical level, if we wanted to just talk about kind of what helps facilitate the type of learning that we're talking about. We know that human beings learn as they breathe. So we know that kids are going to be learning regardless. But I think we also want to sort of offer that environment and that space that helps them just kind of really have the room to do that. And the, I don't know if encouragement is the right word, but kind of the time and space to do that. So I didn't know if we have a few minutes to just talk about that. Ashley, are you?
Yeah, you're good? I'm good. Yeah, you're fine? I'm still good for time.
Okay. I wanted to say that just kind of hearing as people are talking, I'm thinking about the fact that a lot of the things that we're talking about we all did natural learning, even though we were going to school. We had, you know, Kelly, you gave a great example of your drive-through in air quotes experience. We're all experimenting with things. We were all learning through risk and physical play and, you know, stories, all those different ways we know kids learn. So it's not that you need to be outside of the school system to kind of take advantage of learning and to be able to look and spot your child's learning. But I do think that having the open time and space allows, what I find is that play sometimes turns into other play, sometimes turns into other play. Or maybe there's something that kids do and they want to come back to it a week later. Or they're finished for the day, but they come back to it the next morning. And so there's something to me about kids having just enough open time and open space, access to materials, all the pauses we've talked about, if it involves, you know, some mess. there's something there that I do think is harder if kids are in school every day, but I don't think it's, I still think that there's lots that can happen. There's lots that we can be looking for. But Ashley, we had done a podcast episode, I think, on flow mm-hmm. and learning. And it reminds me of that, how to me, it's the difference between kind of having some pockets of opportunity during the week and doing some stuff and doing some natural learning versus having the opportunity to really get into flow. Because I do think it's a different, quality of learning. And April, I mean, there's no way that we, as you've said, there's no way for us to know this, but when kids come to things in their own time, like reading, that is interesting to me, like how deeply maybe that's embedded when they're coming to it in their own time. So anyway, I don't know if anybody else, what you find or what you think about, you know, in your own homes, what do we notice kind of leads to that? I'm going to say state of flow, because I think that's where the big learning happens.
I think, Erin, I think you already answered it.
Yeah.
I feel like you nailed it. It's time, it's space, and it's, you know, room for chaos. Like that's, if I had to kind of pin it down to three things, I feel like the time and space thing is huge. Like you can't, you don't get that at school. You can't get that at school. And I also learned from listening to your podcast episodes, I was telling you ladies about this earlier, that Ashley, it was really listening to you talk about your homeschooling, unschooling days a year ago that allowed me to get to this place. I was feeling, even though we were unschooling, we were still up and out all the time. And to me, like flipping that around and staying home and letting them be bored and find things to do. And like, I won't say that we're in a complete state of chaos, but we have like projects that have been started and are sitting kind of all over the place so that when they want to come back to them, they can easily find it and pick it up again. We do, put things away occasionally, but I feel like those three things actually, and I would add one more, trust. That's so just good. Once you, the time and the space and the room for chaos and trusting the process, I feel like that to me is like a little recipe for creating what we want to create in our home.
Yeah, that's so good, April. And I would just add to what like Aaron and you just said, like total agreement. And then for the parent who's listening, who's like, but okay, how do I get from very adult directed, and you can have a really adult directed homeschool, or you could even be a very adult directed unschooler if you've just started unschooling, right? And where you are in your deschooling journey and where your kids are, because if you've had your kid in an adult directed environment like school, and then they've left school to come to homeschooling, they have to shift out of that mindset too. And it comes into like what you guys were saying so beautifully about flow. I'm trying to remember where I learned this and it's not on the top of my mind, but it takes 45 minutes for flow to start. So if you guys know who we can credit with that, it's not in there right now, but it takes 45 minutes. They've studied this, for a child to enter flow who is coming from a really adult directed place. And so if you think about it, that's when they're driving you nuts, right? I'm bored. I don't want to do. And you're like, I'm about to turn on that TV, or I'm about to like pull out the gaming console. And this is not a slam against TV and gaming consoles. It's just kind of like we've all been in that moment where, we just want them to self-direct. And it's right when you're like itching to do it, that if you just give yourself 5 minutes, they will have found something. And that's usually right around that 45 minute mark where they like got distracted by something and they've wandered off. And you're
every
just like,
time,
every single time, every right? Time. It's that pause. Like this whole thing is like spot the learning, take a breath and just stifle yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that for the parent who's kind of in that grind, in that sticky place of like, you're transitioning into this lifestyle and it feels really hard and difficult. It's because it is like, you're having to do this work. Your kids are doing this work. Like, I think your recipe is like exactly on point. And remember that it's going to take 45 minutes to enter that play flow. get some loop earbuds and just jam them in real good.
I have to laugh at that 45 minute thing because it's so true, because this is exactly what will happen here too. And it still happens on occasion, but it's like those mornings where everybody is driving me crazy. And I'm like, but I thought we could stay home and do some activities and be productive. And then what I do is I say, all right, I'm going to hop in the shower and then we're going to go out and find something to do. And in that time where I'm in the shower and getting dressed, by the time I am just about to be ready to go out the door, because I'm, world ready, they're both like totally doing something productive and fun and they're having a good time. And I'm like, I knew I shouldn't have called those people up to make that play date 15 minutes from now, because now we could have stayed home and done the thing that I wanted to do an hour ago. But it's just part of this mysterious recipe, right?
Yeah. And I think that our kids can kind of, it is a bit of a practice, but at the same time, I think like you can be homeschooling for a long time. And like you guys have been homeschooling for a while, Aaron, you've schooled for a long time too. I'm sure like this, it's not like a homeschool family gets to a point after homeschooling for X amount of years where like this flow just beautifully, magically happens all the time. Like I think it isn't, because sometimes it can sound that way, right? Like sometimes it can be like, or I remember I used to think like, oh, once you've been doing this for 5 years, like it'll be so much easier. All the days will just flow together so nicely. But we're people, we're all humans, and we change and our needs change, and we're collaborating together so much too, that as our kids get older and as and our needs change too, it can be, there's just like, it's like up and down, a bit of a roller coaster, right? Where you're like, oh, right now things are like going really nicely. The kids are getting along and they have their little projects, and then things start to go downhill a bit and you're like, oh, why is this not working anymore? And I think that that's just maybe the way it is, I think anyway. And it's helpful to know that, I think for me, it's helpful to kind of just like expect that those moments are going to come, and maybe it'll only last a few days, or maybe it'll last longer. And maybe there's some shifts you can make. Like maybe the kids do need to go out a little bit more for some inspiration, and they have been home a lot, or maybe they've been going out too much and they need more time and more opportunity and space to practice having nothing to do. It's hard to know. So it's just like, figuring it out as you go, and just knowing that like it's probably never going to get super easy, and it's not easy for any of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Definitely worth saying that. Yeah. I think sometimes we start telling our happy memories and we make it sound like it all just works out, but it's a lot of work. It's hard every day. It's mm-hmm. it's a job, right? But it's so worthwhile.
Yeah, and I think that those like. I think those are all the pieces that you thank you for adding kind of all those details and nuance to that kind of question or thought, because, you know, Ashley, when you're saying that, it makes me think about how life is just life sometimes. But I think when we're doing something outside the box, it's like, oh no, this isn't working. But actually, you know, if they were in school, the teacher might be feeling the same way about them. Or if they were playing at a friend's house, the friend's mom might, you know, it's just the nature of living together that there are going to be these ups and downs. And then Kelly, like to your point about the flow and the 45 minutes, that, and I don't know who, I have kind of heard that, but I can't help you on that as far as who the source is, but it really does show you the length of time that, and it reminds me too, like often if my daughter, for example, is really into something, this happens to me a lot when she's doing stuff with art, I have to be like, I often want to go see what she's doing. And I want to ask about mm-hmm. it, want to compliment her or whatever. And I have to just be like, walk on by, because she's in this deep state. And the last thing that she needs is me consistently interrupting her. So I think that's another thing, as our kids get older and some of the pieces that they're doing require less of our like in the moment input, is kind of really remembering that we can move back from that a little bit, and that there's a lot to be gained by not interrupting somebody when they're in a state of flow. And I think that's the same with younger kids too. You know, you'll see kids get in groups and they have these elaborate games, and the last thing they need is an adult and they're questioning them about it. Like they're in the zone and they're doing their thing. But April, the idea of not scheduling, you know, too many outside activities is such a good one, because we talked about school, maybe getting in the way of having that flow, but we can do that just as easily mm-hmm. if we are putting a whole bunch of things in place. But man, that's a hard balance sometimes to find. But anyway, I feel like this was so good, and I don't know if anybody else has anything to add. We're probably good for a couple of minutes if you do.
I just wanted to tag onto that some practical tips. I always like practical tips. So what you just said, Erin, is so good about like, well, how do we find that balance? And this isn't like the perfect rubric for it, but here's some things to think about. Like when you're looking to have some activities in your homeschool and you need the adult interaction, especially if you've got younger kids, and your kids, you know, getting out, whatever, have a day at home. I think Julie Bogart talks about that. But having a day at home where you just block it on your calendar and you create margin, have a day where it's just like, it, for us, it works really well for us. We, on Fridays, it's just has to be, because I'm like such a dork with alliteration, it's friends, family, or fun on Fridays, period. Sometimes fun is cleaning the house for me and like letting my kids like destroy it as I clean it. Sometimes fun is like hanging out with our in-person community group. Sometimes it's having just hanging out with someone, or just going and doing an adventure, or doing nothing, right? And so having those days, I had for a long time, Tuesdays was our day of running all the errands and appointments. So I knew if I needed to schedule a doctor's appointment, it was going to be on Tuesday. Or it doesn't have to be a whole day. It can just be like a section. Like so many families have like stuff at home in the mornings and then their afternoons are free. And so finding kind of like a pattern or a rhythm that works for you that you can hold in your mind and know that's a no-go zone, so that you can have that space for you. And you can provide that for your kids. So that's the day that they can just craft all day long, or they can do whatever all day long, I think is a really good thing that helps me in my homeschooling. I share it with parents I coach, and that it seems like it would be intuitive, but it was, at least for me, when I first started homeschooling all those years ago, like I would have appreciated hearing that.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate that. Thank you, Kelly. Cause I had actually meant to ask you, kind of what suggestions you had for people. And I forgot to, because the other thing I was going to take on to that is, Ashley, you talk about the idea of kind of backwards planning or recording things. And I think, you know, for people that are either list makers, either mentally or on paper, that can be helpful too, to look at all that's happening. That was the other piece that I wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I do both those. So I think like what Kelly was talking about, kind of being intentional, looking at the calendar, and I'm not like a super organized person, so I don't do this. I just do it when I think of it, but I have to be intentional about it, or else that's when things tend to not go well, where I'll look at the calendar and make sure, you know, whether like lots of times I don't look at the day too much, but I'll look at the week and I'll look at the month, and then I'll like look at the past month, look at the month ahead, like kind of look more big picture and be like, when have things been working and when have things not been working, and what's going on? And you know, it's a trial and error, going back to like, you can change your mind, right? Like if something's not working anymore, you can do it differently. But I do intentionally at some point grab the calendar off the fridge and kind of take a look ahead at the next few weeks to a month, and, or even sometimes a season, and just, okay, do we have enough planned? Cause we're often on the other end where we can fall into the not having enough planned, and that can get tricky. I know a lot of people, have so much planned that they need to scale back, and that's kind of more so their struggle or issue. But being intentional and doing that ahead of time is like good planning, I find, probably for any family, but especially when you're homeschooling, a lot of times you can just have like large open windows where like so much freedom, and like sometimes it's too much freedom, right? And you're like, okay, what are we going to pick to do? And then of course, like I collaborate with the kids to talk about that as well at different times. But then I also always like reverse plan when it comes to like the daily activities that we do, other than like, you know, the things like we're going to the trampoline park this day, or swimming this day, or meeting friends this day. Everything else, like all the little things that we get into, I write down afterwards, like kind of just like really messy and briefly in my little, like I have an agenda notebook that I like to keep, and I just jot it all down for lots of different reasons that I've shared before. So I think it is a little bit of, and I didn't do that from the beginning. So I think it's a little bit of like giving yourself time, like if you're just starting to homeschool or unschool, to try different things out. And eventually you kind of find like what works for you and for your family.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think too, there's a part of me that just wants to say that what we've been talking about today is so much natural learning, right? We're spotting the natural learning that our kids are doing. And so that's been our focus, but the purpose is not to be like anti-curriculum or anti-course or anti-lessons or anything like that. And later on in the fall, actually, we will be talking about that too, just kind of, you know, how and do and when do people pull in resources and curriculum and that sort of thing. So I just kind of wanted to throw that in there, that, you know, I think we recognize that there's that other angle as well, but today was a really nice chance to, yeah, just really kind of chat about what does learning look like, and how do we how do we spot it, and how amazing our kids are. I really love the stories today, especially these physical ones.
Yeah, and if I can encourage Erin, people to go to Kelly and April's Instagram. Instagram accounts, but I know often I see it in their stories. I really like seeing how you guys both pull out the natural learning and highlight it. I find that just with the way my brain works, having the visual, like the videos that you have, and you both do it in different ways, but it's really helpful to see like explicitly you share like all the learning that's happening in like this like one tiny little thing that your kids are doing. So if anybody is kind of, their brain likes to have that visual and just those reminders, I would encourage people to go visit you guys on Instagram.
Okay. Yeah. And so April, we will link. So for you, it's Modern Homeschoolers and Heroine of Her Own Story.
It's a Heroine of Your Story.
Of Your Story. Yeah, sorry.
But okay. That's very close.
Excellent. Okay. And I love it. You're starting to really build some great resources and ideas for people. Is there anything you want to add to that? Or should we link both of those in the notes?
I think those two Instagram accounts, that would be perfect. I appreciate it. Any engagement or following the page, where I'm at the very beginning stages for both of the accounts. So all of it makes a big difference for anybody who doesn't realize, even just leaving a comment or sharing it with somebody allows anyone who's creating content the opportunity to keep doing it. So we appreciate it. And really appreciate this opportunity to be here with you ladies today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. I think we both really appreciate you coming on today. This has been great. And then Kelly, for you, your 90-minute school day, and I know you've got a couple of new things you're offering, but feel free to share whatever is coming to mind as far as your offerings for people right now.
Thank you guys so much. This has been so wonderful just being with you guys. And it's so affirming, and stories are so powerful. So thank you so much, Erin. And thank you so much, Ashley and April. It's been so much fun being with you today as well. Yes, I have a couple offers this fall. I'm not sure when this one will air, but I have my Day in the Life community that just launched. And that is a lot like this podcast, where we gather in small groups and we talk about all these things and support one another. And ironically, I love the alignment of today's conversation with what we've been working through in August. So each month has a theme, and our theme this August is we work through a time audit, which Ashley, you just basically outlined about how you kind of move with your calendar. And we time audit so we can see where we are and where our current positioning is, so that we can build margin where we need to, so that we can have that space where the kids can learn, right? And then where it moves into rhythm, and we need to offer ourselves self-compassion and learn to not be so judgmental with ourselves. It's such a tough thing. So that's what we're doing in August. And then we're going into other topics looking forward. So you can find out more about me on my Instagram page, 90 Minute School Day, and then my website, 90minuteschoolday.com/DITL for Day in the Life community. We'd love to have your listeners and just awareness. Like April was saying, it's just so nice to know about these resources. If it's not for you, then maybe it's for someone else to have that in-person community. Everybody has a small group, and the small groups are fantastic, such a supportive community on Marco Polo. And then I have guide training. So for people who really are kind of in that grind, right? Of like, okay, I'm just entering homeschooling, or I've been homeschooling and I want to go into unschooling, and I need help and some scaffolding with de-schooling. I just don't feel comfortable all by myself over here. Guide training is a scaffolded program where we walk through in 8 sessions as a group. And we have it in the fall and the spring. So that's coming up in the fall. So thank you for this opportunity to share what programs I offer to support homeschooling and unschooling parents. And I'm just so grateful to be here with all of you guys. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you. This was fun. I enjoyed this. So
thank you.
Have a good rest of your day, everybody.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks, guys.
You. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. I, Erin, can be found at Everlearning, and Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.